Welcome, Photon Warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
Baby, are we taping? Are we taping, baby? Hey, welcome to the Movies Hate You show, the first and only movie show on the Jackalope family of shows and stations and conglomerates and supermarkets and all that stuff. With me tonight is the mental oriental, Mr. Ree. You're back again. Can't get rid of you.
Yo, what a surprise. What a surprise.
Yo, what up, Mr. Ree? You like that? What up? I'm kind of like doing my urban New York thing, man.
Ooh, yeah. What up? I like that.
Don't make me sick, Mr. Ree. Well, from the shadows of New York City, east of the Rockies, that's right, it's the Movies Hate You show, not sponsored by bmovie.com. Did you hear that, Mr. Ree? Not sponsored. When's the last time you got a DVD to review?
Gosh, I think the last one I got was a Beta, in fact.
A Beta, that's how long ago it's been since bmovie.com, who we don't even have to plug anymore. Bmovie.com doesn't want to sponsor the show anymore. Because of you, Mr. Ree. We got canned. You're the worst shills in the world for movies. I love it. I love being fired. I
lose
love
a sponsor and the window opens, right? Is that how it works?
One door slams in your face and then the window closes on your fingers. That's what I like to say.
Exactly.
Well, no thanks to you, we lost our sponsor. Now, and I don't, and you know what, to be honest with you, Mr. Ree, Lee Peterson, I say your real name. Mr. Ree's just a bit. It's just a bad, drawn out bit. That won't die. I just want people to know who you are, so that in 50 years, when your heirs dig this out of the ground and listen to it, they can say, "Yeah, that was him. We suspected it was you, but we didn't know." Thank goodness that kind host said your full Christian name.
You know, that's true. My kids are aware of the radio show, but I've never mentioned my alter ego. So
they're not going to like it.
Well, you know, they got a few years before it's really appropriate for them to listen to this. So
yeah, I would say so. Yeah, any, but there, you know, there are some shows on the Jackalope station that they could listen to. I'm sure Night Watch is G rated. They could, as far as I know.
Yeah, well, we're pretty good. We're pretty PG rated. I mean, we. Sometimes drop in an entendre or two, but
yeah. Sometimes there's we have a guest on that forgets about the family nature of the show, and they do drop a bomb here or there. But that's okay, you know. We in the archives, that's okay, you know. But when we go live, man, we have to abide by the FCC regulations.
Technically,
isn't that true, Mr. Is Mr. Todd Sheets with us tonight?
I'm here.
Mr. Sheets! Oh, it's Yay. So good to hear you, man. So good to hear you, bro. Welcome back.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Welcome back to the Movies Hate You show, even though we've already done a Welcome Back Todd show.
That's right. Welcome back again.
Welcome back again, Mr. Cotta.
Every week should be a Welcome Back show.
Every week is. Every day is a welcome back show. When you wake up in the morning, Todd, it's a welcome back show.
The scary thing is, it really is.
Really, for everyone. For everyone, man. Some of us appreciate it more than others. But it really is, man. It really is.
Some of our listeners might have Alzheimer's, so it's okay. It's okay to...
So if you have Alzheimer's, is your day like a Groundhog Day every morning?
I would think so.
Man, Mr. Ree, you kind of stepped in that one.
Yeah, you don't have...
I guess I did, yeah.
You don't have Alzheimer's, do you, Mr. Ree?
I don't. But you know, a guy goes to his doctor, and the doctor says, I got some bad news, and I've got some really bad news. Let me give you the bad news first. You have AIDS. And he goes, oh, geez. Okay, what's the really bad news? He says, well, you also have Alzheimer's. He says, well, at least I don't have AIDS.
So...
That's a good one.
My stomach, man.
Just to guarantee that my kids are not going to listen to this show. That.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point you bring up, because your children are being raised in a completely different world than any of us were raised in the sense that it's such a politically correct world right now. And of course, we jest about your Asian heritage and whatnot, and maybe that's a safe attack. Maybe that's the last bastion of un-PC behavior. Because, I mean, as a rule, Asians are pretty happy-go-lucky about that kind of stuff.
I don't know. You know,
to their credit, because it's in jest, and there's really no true discrimination in America.
No, that's all gone. It passed a law, it's all gone.
It's gone. It's gone, man. I mean, we have a half minority president. I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, that's a step in the right direction. One day we might have an Asian president. It might be you, Mr. Ree. It might be your Oriental children.
He might be half queer for all we know. So
who? Obama?
You know? He might be. We don't know, do we?
He might have experimented.
I mean, we only know about the one minority that he belongs to. We don't know about any other minority.
He might be a bisexual.
He could be.
He might be a cross-dresser. I mean, you know, he might be allergic to wheat. I mean, we can really narrow this down. Where's this going, Mr. Ree?
I don't know. You know, I saw today there's speculation that Obama's got his October surprise. I think this is a stretch of things, but people are talking about the whole pot legalization as being a big issue, because apparently it's up for law for vote in a few states, and so the theory is, I forget where I read this, Huffington Post or someplace, the theory is that he may be slipping with the youth vote, and really the only chance he has winning is by courting the youth vote. And how do you do that? And he's already done the gay marriage thing, God bless him, but they're thinking that federal...
That's like a contradiction right there.
Yeah, well,
the gay vote, God bless him. It's just something there that just doesn't seem to... I don't know. Right.
Well, I'm an atheist, so I can say God whenever I want to. It's like people use the F word. It can mean anything. It can be a verb, it can be a noun, it can be whatever. But I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think he's? I mean, to me, he doesn't really seem like a very pro pot president. I mean, I know he did say, "Yeah, I smoked it once," but basically,
did he say once?
Well, maybe I didn't. He didn't say once.
I mean, it was Clinton, right?
Clinton. Well, Clinton did the famous, "I did smoke it. I tried it once, but I didn't inhale."
Right, and the story behind that is the in-joke of that was that it was actually true, because at the party that he was referencing that he did do pot, he had eaten a pot brownie. That's supposedly the inside, and I'm dead serious, that's supposedly the inside Washington joke, is that he was telling the truth when he said that because he was eating pot brownies.
It just seemed to me like a real feeble attempt to say what he thought people wanted to hear, which is what you know, politicians are the best at doing. And to me, that's what Obama seemed, it seemed like we've progressed to a point where it's okay to say, oh, I did it when I was young. That's fine. That's fine to say. I mean,
yeah, you're not going to get a, you know, you're not going to get a president. You know, look, Mitt Romney did too, I'm sure. You know, he's not going to admit it, but you're not going to find a president under 70 years old who hasn't, you know, or anyone to ever be president under, you know, geriatric age that hasn't tried pot or hasn't had a couple nights of drunken craziness or whatever. You know, it's part of growing up. It's part of college. It's part of rites of passage for male and female to some degree, partying and letting loose and all that. You know, I mean, even geeks and nerds and shut-ins, they do bizarre things like smoke banana peels while watching Doctor Who and stuff. You know, so yeah.
Would you trust anyone who didn't try pot of that age? I mean, forget about like our parents' age, you know, a whole different generation. I'm sure my parents never tried pot, but I would never trust anybody who grew up in the 70s who didn't try it.
Well, I don't know, man. Would you ever trust anybody who grew up in the 80s and didn't snort cocaine?
I didn't snort cocaine.
Sure. There you go. And I trust you, Todd.
Yeah, I've never done cocaine.
I trust me.
I've never done cocaine. Do you not trust me? I've honestly never tried cocaine.
Well, I did. I can tell you all about it.
That's enough for me. You know what it is with me? I'm kind of anxiety prone. I'm paranoid and anxiety prone, and I like to control a situation. So drugs don't necessarily work in my situation. The drugs that take you out of, like LSD, I don't think would ever work for me. Never tried it. Wouldn't work for me. Pills work for me. Morphine, oxycodone, stuff to bring me out of that. Because adding cocaine to my situation is like, you know, gasoline on the fire situation for me. At least that's how I perceive it. I'm not foolish enough to think I'll get more done. Because I suffer from Todd Sheets disease. I got my fingers in too many pies, and I need to pull that back. If it's something like cocaine or speed or meth on my side, I would certainly be dead.
Now, undoubtedly, you had points where somebody offered it to you. I mean, did you know?
Oh, God, I've been around every drug. I've been at, yeah, oh yeah, for years and years and years and years. I, you know. You're talking to an ex-reformed metalhead from the 80s. I've been around everything and every stupid situation and with that stuff, and I've been offered everything. Absolutely. It's just a personal choice. It's just, you know, I think knowing yourself enough to say, you know what, this I don't think is going to work for me. But, you know, pot, booze, pills, whatever, this other stuff does work for me. There was never enough curiosity there, you know? And I think if you see enough people being an idiot on something, or you see, like, wow, you know, it seems like people who do heroin aren't just casually doing it. It seems like everyone who did heroin is kind of like suicide, or really goes off the deep end.
Dead.
Anybody who does, you know, crack, they don't seem to really last too long. Hey, these guys doing meth and these girls doing meth, they don't really seem to be having a good time. It's not recreational, you know. So cocaine, wow, people really get hooked on that, and they really, have you ever really known a cocaine addict? Have you ever really spent time with one? Have you ever had a close friend get mixed up in cocaine? Well, I have, and it's not pretty. And for that fact alone, I would not get mixed up in that crap. What it turns people into. What it takes the people's souls, the way it does it, and I've seen creative, promising, intelligent people turn their life into one big con job over it, turn their existence into a joke over cocaine. And when you've seen that, you could say, oh, look, if you want to do cocaine, I don't care. But not in my house, not in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my opinion. You want to do it, do it. They want to legalize it, legalize it. I'm not going to fight it, but I'm not going to tell you not to do it. But I'm going to say, for me, that personal choice comes from knowing myself and what my emotional makeup is, and then also knowing what it can do to people. Not everybody who tries it goes insane, but seeing how, you know, and also I have an addictive personality. Give me a video game, I'll play it for 3 days straight. You know, I have that. I have that personality.
I get problems, the same way, dude.
Yeah.
Huh?
You got problems.
I do have problems, but I have them in check.
I don't know.
What?
Golly.
You see these guys addicted to VHS? You see
the crazy? Yeah, you're one of them.
You see these guys? Yeah, see, that's what I mean. I can get addicted to VHS. And I said to myself, I'm looking at 5,000 tapes, and I say, you know what? That's enough. And then I see all this stuff. I see all this stuff going on online. And I say, "Ooh, I should start showing my tapes." And I say, "No, don't get involved in that, because then you get into the pissing contest, and then you're going out and you're buying tapes to best these other 20-year-olds who are just getting into us. Let them have their fun. I had my fun. Todd, you had your fun. You got a garage full of VHS. You know what it's all about. We had our fun in our time, but that I got to hold back that addictive personality that wants to get out there and be the best at it."
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of VHS, Goblin, a Todd Sheets motion picture, is on Amazon for $100 used.
Crackhead.
The crackhead's the one who doesn't buy it.
Jesus.
How much coke would that buy?
I don't know, but probably enough to get you through a couple hours, right? I mean, it's not a cheap drug.
I gotta tell you one real quick cocaine story. Now, much like you, I have always known that I have an addictive personality as well. And the first time I tried it, I said to myself, you know what, this is just too perfect. If I crossed the line and actually bought it, then it would be trouble. So I said to myself, you know what, if it's ever offered to me, fine. This is many, many years ago. I probably did it under a dozen times in my entire life. The last time I did it was an isolated incident about 15 or so years ago. It was a guy I worked with who was considerably younger. He's probably 20, in his very early 20s, and I'm almost 50 now, so you know, I was 15 years older than him or whatever. Isolated incident. Didn't even see the guy. Haven't seen the guy in a long, long time. And then just a couple of months ago, I saw him. I ran into him on the street. He didn't recognize me. I saw him, and he looked like... All right, he was the last guy I did cocaine with, but I was definitely not the last guy he did cocaine with.
Right.
He looked like 10 years older than I am. And He never stopped. He was terrible. And he was like a model. I mean, at the time, he was like an up-and-coming, not an upcoming model, but he was a handsome kid, and he got some print work and stuff. And now he looks like his teeth are gone, and it's just, you know... I felt so bad for him, but I thought, now I'm so glad that I can say that was 15 years ago. So, kids, if you're listening,
yeah, kids, if you're your kids, talk to your kids. Don't talk to anybody else. Look, kids, listen to me, you little brats. Don't go into daddy's top drawer. Don't go into daddy's bottom drawer. The magazines are in the bottom drawer. The drugs are in the top drawer. Cigarettes are in the second drawer. The bottle is in his office desk at work, so you'll never get that. Stay away from these things, kids.
Yeah.
Advice to kids. Can you imagine us giving advice to kids?
Well, Todd and I are both parents, so we give advice to kids all the time, right, Todd?
We do. It's rather frightening, but I've done a pretty good job. I have to admit, I have done a pretty good job with my son. He's doing great, and my daughter too. They're both they really surprise me sometimes how amazing they are.
Mm-hmm.
How old are they?
Well, my son is 19 now.
Jeez, man! What, you have him when you were 3?
Pretty close,
dude.
You know, man. You gotta get an early start some days.
Todd, I gotta tell you, man, it looks like your addiction is sex.
Nope. Now, when I was younger, though, there was some partying going on, but you know why? That was the age of rock and roll. And when you're in a band and you're a nerd all your life and suddenly you got things flying at you left and right, dude, you don't say no or why. You say, hell's yes, bring me more titty.
Let me tell you, that is so true. And when you grow your hair long, and you still have long hair. I used to have long hair like you, Mr. Sheets. I think you still have long hair.
Yes, I do.
They shave it off. Okay, so I had two stages of long hair in my life. Once in high school, and then again in college. It was kind of like when high school ended, metal was ending. I conformed a little bit to get a job that wasn't working at a gas station. And then I said, working sucks. I'm going to school. I took a couple years off after high school. Went to college. Alternative music kicked in. Nirvana, Pearl Jam, all this. Long hair's back in. I said, perfect opportunity to grow back my beautiful long hair. And the chicks were lining up around the block. Let me tell you.
Did you ever notice, though, that music kind of sucked?
I don't think so. You say what you want about it, but I don't think so.
Nirvana.
Get out of here.
The best thing that happened to Nirvana is when he killed himself so we could get Dave Grohl to do his own band.
You're a fool.
That he doesn't even write. Suddenly everyone's pissed.
I thought this was a movie show. Where the hell is this going? I like this better as an advice show. Can we turn this into an advice show? This is advice on movies. You're going to make a movie, call us. We'll give you advice. You're going to watch a movie, we'll give you advice.
Better
you
want to
buy a VHS?
Yeah,
who cares, man? This is freeform stunt radio. I really don't care if you listen. I really don't care if you like it. Mr. Reed doesn't care. Todd doesn't care. We're doing what we want. This is from the heart, man.
This is from the soul.
We tried to touch you. And let me get back to something.
Soul Train.
Let me get back to something. Forget about long hair. Nobody wants to hear that crap. Yeah. Long hair's so out. Let me tell you. You're so cutting edge, Todd. Because when long hair comes back, you're going to be right there, man.
That's true.
When I retire, I'm going to grow my hair long and grow a beard and be one of those old guys with the gray ponytail.
Oh yeah,
and the beard, and the denim shirt. One of those guys, the glasses in the top pocket or hanging around the string on the neck. You see those guys? They got the shorts and the denim shirt, and you see them at the garage sales. They're holding on. They're holding on, man. That's Todd. I'm telling you,
that's not Todd.
The goatee, white hair back in a ponytail, the denim shirt, the glasses hanging off around the neck.
Not me.
Yeah, man. The Chuck Taylors looking around, snooping around flea markets.
You know why I have Chuck Taylors? Do you know why?
I don't know, man. I got them too.
They're the only ones that make Batman shoes.
Enough with that, man. You have enough Batman coming up this summer. You don't need to bring it to this show.
Yes, I do. I'll bring it to every show.
You got your ultimate orgasm this summer when Batman, the death of Batman opens.
It's not the death of Batman, fool.
Dies at the end, dude. I read the script.
He doesn't die.
Okay, dude. I'll see you at the movies.
You know I'm right.
All right, Siskel. I'll see you at the movie.
I will throw things at people.
What? Yeah?
It'll be bad.
Do you have your tickets already?
I do.
How much did you pay for them?
$17.
Oh, dude, they're going here, man. They're going here for big bucks. $120, $250.
What?
Yeah, people are buying them and reselling them on Craigslist. This is New York, man. Anything has a price. You want to be there opening night? Too bad, man. Just 4 million people in line in front of you. But for $300, I can get you into the IMAX at midnight on Thursday.
Dude, it's already a done deal for me. I don't know what the hell people are talking about.
Well, we're on a geographical difference here. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, it's supply and demand. I mean, there are. To me, it baffles me. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to see the movie, and I'm looking forward to it and everything. But
you're going to download.
What I'm saying is the idea of being there the first night. It just isn't that appealing to me. I'm not saying I think it's crazy because I do a lot of things that people think are crazy. So I can't get behind spending $300. For that experience, because that experience doesn't seem any different to me than seeing it the next night. Now, maybe I'm totally missing something, but
I know. Hey, listen, I'm going to see Prometheus on Saturday, and I've been avoiding all the fanboy Facebook.
I can tell you all about it if you'd like.
Nah, that's all right. Don't be one of those guys.
Yeah. Prometheus dies at the end, I think.
Don't
Prometheus dies at the end.
That's what I hear, yeah.
It's a prequel to Alien. I'm spoiling it for you.
Oh.
It's a loose semi-prequel, sort of in the same universe, but not. Where Alien was claustrophobic, this is agoraphobic.
Hmm.
How about that?
You mean afraid of sweaters?
Yeah, not agoraphobic, you fool.
Oh, sorry.
That would be like afraid of Ed Wood. Who could ever be afraid of Ed Wood?
Yeah.
Your old drinking buddy, Ed Wood.
Oh, if only. If only. Yeah, just if one night drinking with Ed Wood. Wouldn't that have been great?
Just to have one drink with him. Just to walk by him having a drink would be cool.
Yeah.
I was 8 years old when he died, and I would have had a drink then with him if I could have. If I had a time machine, I would go back and find Ed Wood and nothing else. For the lottery and all that crap. Forget betting on horses. I'm going to meet Ed Wood. That's the genie in the bottle wish right there, man. Hang out with Ed Wood.
For me, it would be Tracy Lords circa 1984.
Well, it's because you're a pedo.
Listen, hear me out. If I went back to 1984, she would still be legal age as far as everybody knows. Right?
Don't get your hopes up.
So
this guy's a real slob, isn't he? You're a real pig.
Come on.
Yeah, you thought
I had my lawyer take a look at this. It's all above board.
Attention, law enforcement. trace this number, please. check this guy's computer, please. Too bad. Have you been on a plane lately? I'm going to let the TSA know about you.
I haven't been on a plane.
And I mean, let the TSA know about you, like give you an application because they're hiring.
You can touch people, right?
Look, there's a whole thing. They're really obsessed with kids. They love fondling children, and then it turns out there are some convicted pedophiles who are TSA agents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, excommunicated priests who are TSA agents. A lot of dirt coming out on these dirt balls.
Well, of course, it's like to be rational, pedophiles are going to go where the kids are. So you look for, what jobs are there where you're around a lot of kids. I mean, that's not saying that everybody who's obviously not every priest is, not every, Penn State football coach is, but that's where they tend to go, because what I'm saying. So of course,
I'm with you.
Some of those in that business because they look for the kind of work that would put them in a position where they would.
Absolutely right, man. Absolutely, they're aiming themselves in that direction. It's the same way when in my single days before I met my lovely wife. Dating a single woman with children, you'd be surprised how many of them are not aware that some guys just date women with kids for that reason, because they're closet pedophiles. And that's why you hear a lot of stories about the stepfather. There was just a story in the news, stepfather killed the daughter, raped the daughter, touched the kid, blah, blah, blah. Stepfather's doing business because they put themselves in that situation, and it detaches them. It's not their own child.
Mm-hmm.
Sick world, man. Sick world. Always was a sick world. Everyone said, oh, God, the world's going to crap. No, it's always been like this. We just didn't hear about it. You just didn't have instant communication. You didn't have the means to get this information. This stuff went on forever. This stuff went on forever. You didn't hear about it. It always happened. All this stuff, murders, all this stuff. It's not going to hell. It's always been hell. Just get over
it. The stuff with Jerry Sandusky, the Penn State.
Oh, God.
I try not to follow the case too much, but that's a perfect case in point. That was going on for so many years, and covered up. It's only now that it's coming out through an accident. It isn't like it just happened now. The guy was doing it for
Years and years. And how many other people in those kind of positions, and priests and teachers and coaches and all, it's, you know, it, all the time. And it's all the time.
There's a teacher, I don't remember where this was, but she was found to have been having a relationship with her 16-year-old student.
And yeah, that happened.
Turned out that there was a bet that the kids in the class had a bet, I guess, as to which kid could get to her first, and the kid who did it got $400. The pot had been raised to $400. So I don't know what the point of that is, but when I was 16, there weren't teachers like that.
Here's the thing, you know, it's a funny joke. When you see some of these women, they're quite good looking, who have this, you know, they're just as sick as the males. This obsession with the young boys and, you know, training them, or, you know, possessing them, or whatever their mental game is with these kids. You see them and you're like, oh God, when I was a kid, I wish that happened to me. You know, you always say that, because when we were in grammar school and high school, it was always like, oh, you know, there was always that one hot teacher. There was always that one. And who knows? Maybe there was stuff going on at your school or my school. Who knows? Who knows, man? There were some flirty teachers, let me tell you. There were some real guy, you know, male teachers and female teachers. They were flirty with the students, and you'd see them after school talking by a car, or you'd see them out off to the side, at the side of the, you know, in the auditorium. They're off to the side after hours, or they're walking, you know, the male teachers walking the student to the bus. There's so much layering in our lives. Everybody wants it to be black and white. There's so much little tiny stuff going on that you just will never ever know about, and it's good that way, man. And that's why creative people are so important, to bring all this kind of stuff to light in their own way through their stories. Now, wasn't that a nice little segue? I feel like this is the freaking Mr. Rogers show.
My son goes to school in middle school in Manhattan. I'm not going to say where, but recently it's a really nice school, and it's very, you know, it's on the list of you know, the best school of Manhattan.
I'll go to hell with your bragging, you yuppie.
No, it's all just I'm setting the stage. The guy who was the principal, and I think he actually founded the school 10, 15 years ago, whatever, just this year, retired. Not an old guy, but retired. And his deal, I don't know him very well, but his deal was that he hugged everybody. And it was really cool to watch. I went there, I guess I was picking up my son, and they had a little thing in the auditorium to say goodbye to him and whatnot. And I swear that there was this line of hundreds of kids giving him a hug to say goodbye. And it was so warm and nice, but because we live in this time, naturally in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, you know, what's this all about? And I hate myself for thinking that, because it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, a hug is a hug, you know, and a hug should be a hug. And it's, you know, but there are schools, one school, I think, someplace in New York just passed a
somewhere, an anti-hugging.
You cannot hug. Kids can't hug teachers or each other or whatever, and that's just,
I don't think that was New York, but yeah, that was somewhere on the East Coast. It's crazy, but you know what? You don't want to be around kids.
Well, everybody's suspicious. That's the thing. I mean, we've trained ourselves to be. I think it's okay to be. What's the two notches below suspicious? You know.
Yeah.
Wary or observant. You should be observant, but you know, I can see if this guy was in another place, another time or place, that could be fun. And what if one kid didn't like him? Let's say the guy was completely above board, and yet, you know, one kid, for whatever reason, was a troubled kid or whatever, didn't like him and said, oh, he molested me. Who are you going to believe? Mm. There's this guy who makes a habit of hugging everybody. You know, it's just, a weird place that we're living in.
It really is. Wow.
But, anyway.
Dead wow. air.
What? Who cares? Okay, I love dead air, man. Screw you, dead air. I don't owe you anything. I'll give you dead air. I'll give you crap. And you'll publish it. You'll put it on the air. That's right. Dead air lives here. What a terrible movie show, though, this is. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Terrible movie show.
Terrible movie show. We haven't talked about movies. You know, I started joking around at the beginning of the show about BMovie.com dumping us. But the truth is that, you know, a site like BMovie.com just can't survive in this world. You know, they're, you know, it's like people go there and they look and they're like, oh, well, let me go check Amazon. And then they go buy it for $2 on Amazon because of some... the whole system is screwy for like sales and DVD sales and stuff like that because, you know, what something that's $10... There's always somebody on Amazon who's willing to sell it for $3 as like a loss leader because they have like 100,000 items. So they're just working on volume. They're not really working on per piece profit. If that makes any sense to anyone. But the truth is that unless you're specialized in like, you know, imports or rare stuff or bootlegs or something, there's no way to make something like BMovie.com work. So I think, you know, I think it's safe to say BMovie.com might be going away. And that's why we're not really pushing it anymore. We're still friends with them. They're great guys. And they have some great reviews up there and stuff. And all the Wild Eye stuff is up there and a lot of other cool labels. And, you know, it's a shame because, you say, and I had the same problem, and I don't want to get angry, Todd, I had the same problem on our last show talking about trying to get people to donate money to you, Todd. Has anything more come in? Just are people helping?
No.
See what I mean? It's like here, BMovie.com or Todd Sheets doing Jackalope. These are independent ventures. But damn it, if people don't always, you know, I can't get away from people talking about Prometheus or the, you know, later Avengers.
Last week, you had 3,754 downloads through the archives, so there's almost 4,000 people that heard that.
Heard what we said, and not $1 was sent.
You know? That's okay, though, because I feel like a beggar. I'm not a beggar.
That's crazy, man. I'll beg for you, though. I told you. I went to bat on a couple different shows for you, my own show, and I'll keep doing it, man. I have no problem doing it for you. I'm not going to do it for me. I'm going to do it for you. I have no problem, because you deserve it. But I'm not going to do it now, but I'm saying it's that same thing that kills something like BMovie.com is the friggin' apathy. Maybe it's too many choices. Maybe the economy is just so bad and people can't spare $5. Maybe everybody is looking for the best deal possible in the world. But, you know, it's really killing the business of independent cinema, true independent cinema. Now, all these people went and spent money on Prometheus, and they spent money on the Avengers, the record-breaking numbers on stuff. They're going to see movies. It's not like, well, movies are dead. It's just something. Maybe they're afraid to spend money on things they don't know about. They don't want to take a chance. Oh, Prometheus is sanctioned. It's pretty. It's already given to us. It's packaged. I know where it is. I'm not taking a chance. But they are. They're taking a chance. But don't complain about how crappy Hollywood movies are and then make it $500 million or whatever. Don't do it. And then crap on the independents by not supporting them with your dollars. It's a very complex web, Mr. Ree. I don't really know what I'm saying, but I sense something, and I think it's apathy. Because people get excited about things, but even the most obscure people are getting excited about mainstream things. I don't know if it's just that everything's so blended that Prometheus lives alongside something, you know, some kind of independent feature, and it's just all in the same world, or people seem to be really choosing with their dollar. It's like people who eat at McDonald's. Like, it's like they know they're eating crap, but yet that company can't lose. So something, is it the cheapness of the food? Or is it an emotional connection to the food? Do we have an emotional connection to Hollywood that keeps bringing us into the theater? You know, is there a perceived quality? The perceived quality is, yeah, it's a perceived quality because something like Prometheus, even the most non-sophisticated writer on Facebook or blogger or all this stuff is saying, like, the script is so terrible, it's weak, it's hollow, there's really no story, blah, 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 blah. Keep hearing that. So, but yet you gave it your $20. So what did, so define it for me. Is it visually, you just want to see pretty visuals, or you have an emotional attachment to the Alien franchise and you want to see what's going on? Ridley Scott, you know, what is it? What is it that, I mean, I remember going to movies as a kid and you didn't know what the movie was, but you went into the movie and you sat down. Do people do that anymore? Or is that something maybe they do with cable VOD? Or I don't know. Somebody tell me. Somebody write me. Well, movies hate you. MoviesHateYou@gmail.com. We haven't called that out in a while. Yeah, that's right. It's the Movies Hate You show, where we might just talk about anything but movies, which is good too. It's nice to take a little break. Get out of your own head with these stupid movies. They only are movies at the end of the day. You're not going to see any special guests here. Not tonight. Except Mr. Ree.
I'm a special guest.
You're not so special anymore. You're kind of you're a sidekick co-host at this point.
Yeah. But, you know, I think mostly it's apathy. That's probably the easiest way to explain.
I think it's apathy. I really do, man. As somebody who releases movies that I go out and handpick and have spent my life savings and my current income putting out and trying to give some love to and letting people know about, I don't think it's that. I don't take it as a rejection personally that I've done something wrong, because I stand behind everything I've put out, and the special features and the production and the artists I hire to work with and the filmmakers I work with, there's every single one is special to me. So I know, and I've done the best I could. And it might not be Criterion, but I've done the best I could with the money and resources I have. So I know that the love is there. So I know that's not missing. I know I just didn't throw it out there and say, screw you. So, but where is that paid back? Is it just that it's just such a small market for this stuff anymore? Or people are afraid? Or it's just not getting out there. I just don't have $20 million to promote it. I just don't have the backing of, you know, maybe that's what it is. Can I tell you one thing? Can I tell you one thing before you go on, Mr. Ree? I love cutting you off, man. I live for it, dude. I count down the 6 days in between these shows just to cut you off. I love it, man. I love it. If anybody wants to call in and cut this guy off, I will let you. Todd, cut him off. Say something, Mr. Ree.
Hi, Mr. Ree.
Cut him off. Mr. Ree, say something.
That reminds me of a story I'd like
cut
to
him
tell
off,
you.
Todd.
Sorry, Mr. Ree.
Todd's a gentleman.
You're Todd's done. Too nice. He's a gentleman.
Oh, there you go. But, you know, it's the same thing that, it's the same reason, I don't know if apathy is really the right word for it, but people take a comfort in what is given to them on a grand scale, whether they know it or not. And this is true of everybody. This is true of me, true of everyone, even, you know, the people who think they're smarter than the rest. In New York, you see the tourists come, and you've got at your fingertips, within walking distance, you've got the best Italian food outside of Italy, anywhere in the world. You have the best Chinese food anywhere in the world. You've got all these options. You've got any possible ethnic variation on food you could want within walking distance. And where do people go? Applebee's.
Yeah. Red Lobster in Times Square. Yeah.
Exactly. Why would you do that?
It's comforting. It's familiar. Let me tell you something. I walk through Times Square every day, and not out of choice, because I work in New York. And those places, Red Lobster is a line out the door. And this is, stadium-sized place to begin with. Line out the door. Ruby Tuesday, line out the door. You walk two blocks, you can go find a little cool cafe that you're not going to find in your hometown. But, yeah, these people come here from Minnesota, and they say, how'd you get an Applebee's?
They got Applebee's. But guess what? You know, if I go to France, I'm going to be looking for something like, where can I just get a friggin' hamburger or something? You know what I mean? So, yes, it's we are conditioned, and we are sold this. We're sold this reality. And Applebee's is part of that reality for most people. McDonald's is part of that reality. Todd Sheets movies are not part of that reality.
No.
So a jerk like me has to spend his paycheck trying to get people interested in Todd Sheets movies or movies like them. It's a losing battle, guys. It's a losing battle.
Well, but you don't have to fight the battle. I mean, you can still...
No, you just do what you're going to do. Fight it. You're never going to fight it. You're never going to win. But there are little tricks and back doors and side doors and fire escapes to work through. Like, let me tell you something. Two Wild Eye movies are going to be on VOD on cable in millions of homes. That's a big deal for us. We're going to be on cable TV. I just got the bill for closed captioning. Do you guys know, and all independent filmmakers out there, when you get a movie on television, it's not as easy as, hey, you got your movie on television. Shake my hand. Okay, you're rich. It doesn't work like that. You have to spend money to get on television. The system is so set up to get to these higher echelons, you're going to pay. Or somebody's going to pay. You got to pay for this. You got to pay for insurance. You got to have error and omissions insurance. Thousands of dollars just to get on TV. In case the movie offends someone who then sues everyone, or, you know, defames someone who then sues the cable channel. You have to have the insurance. Did you know that, Todd?
I was not aware.
Well, damn it, I'm aware of it.
Darn.
Anyway,
I think if people had any idea how things really work, I'm not talking like on a conspiracy level, but just how, you know, that, for instance, if people had any idea that that's how decisions are made, or that if you walk into Barnes & Noble and the books that are on that front display are there because they were paid huge amount of money to be put in there.
And right,
one of those
thoughts
is, you know, it isn't that the person who runs the bookstore says, this should be a good book, I mean, you should read this.
Right.
It's all advertisement.
Everything you see. Yeah. Everything you see. Man, let me pull back the curtain. When you go to the store and you see those movies right in the front, the new releases, they were paid for. The person, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, Rob, man, we want your stuff in Best Buy. We're going to take 2,000 pieces, 5,000 pieces, whatever. That's an order from Best Buy, 5,000 pieces. Oh, great. Yeah, but, you know, your wholesale's a little high. We're going to want it, let's say your wholesale's $8. Yeah, we're going to want it for $6. Oh, great. I just want to be in Best Buy. I don't care. Yeah, that's perfect. Oh, yeah, you know, and there's a buyback. There's, you know, what's called a shelf, you know, a shelf buyback, a price, $2 per unit. Per DVD to be on our shelf. Oh, really? So now I'm making $4 every DVD. Oh. And then I got to produce the DVD, and then there's my marketing costs, and I paid a guy to do the cover, I paid an authoring, blah, blah, blah. No, so I'm only making 50 cents on every DVD. So that 5,000 pieces in Best Buy, it sounds awesome, and it's all over Facebook, and it's great, but you only made $2,500. Oh, and of course we can return whatever doesn't sell. Oh, so then 6 months later you get 3,500 back in the mail. Well, what do you do with them? These are the realities of the business.
Yeah, you know that, Todd?
People don't. Filmmaker, I'm very transparent with filmmakers about how crap really works and their chances of success. And maybe it's meant that certain filmmakers don't want to hear that. They just want to hear that they're going to be the next Steven Spielberg. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, chances are you're not going to be right out of the gate. You know, these things happen in a certain way. And they're always flukes, and they're always, you know, overnight success stories here and there. But it just, you know, you get to the root of this stuff, and it's this huge machine, controlled by people who have no interest in what you see or watch.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of
Well, we could talk more about that. I'd love to take calls from independent filmmakers and just give them like the real dope on distribution and the insides a little bit about how it works and what it means. Just to get into a store, the struggle that is and what a big deal that is, or just what it is to get on VOD. Or, you know, and I know everybody does a project and says, well, mine's great and I'm the best and blah, blah, and it very well may be, and it's good to feel that way. But, you know, the disappointment level I see in people, oh, God, really? Only 500 copies? That's a lot, you know, in this day and age, competing with so much stuff. So much stuff. That's good for an independent. But speaking of that, I've been following a rant by our friend 42nd Street Pete on Facebook. Yeah.
42 Pete.
Who I've renamed VHS Pete for his VHS history. Did you happen to read that, the Tarantino rant that's going around on Facebook, Mr. Ray?
I certainly did. I did.
Well, it's like I love to get Pete on with us and Shanghai him onto the show if we have time, Mr. Sheets. Hint hint. But I'd love to put him on the spot on this one because I think he has the same thing. It's like, hey, you know, Tarantino and Rob Zombie, you guys are kind of like a bridge to this old stuff. How come you're not using the old guys? And oftentimes, it's not these guys' decisions.
Right,
as Mr.
Right.
Ree pointed out to me, that it could be several people. I mean, listen, producers, the money people, the studios, they're going to tell you who to put and not to put. And if Tarantino came, I don't care how many Oscars or awards or money you make, you come out and say, hey, I got this movie, but I want it to star this obscure actor from the 70s that 20 guys like and talk about on Jackalope. You know, sorry, it's not going to happen. You know, but if you put a bankable star in it, in the front, then you can do whatever you want with the other roles. I mean, that's what happens. It's just dollars and cents. Stop thinking with your heart on this and enjoy as much as you can what you do get.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
Talking about Django Unchained.
Right. And I have my problems with...
Franco Nero was in the trailer. That was enough for me, dude. I don't even need to see the movie. That dude brought out Franco Nero. Enough for me.
Yeah.
The man who played Versace, Franco Nero... No one remembers that, huh, little fanboys? Too busy talking about Cannibal Holocaust and Texas Chainsaw 2. Yeah. Franco played Versace. You missed that one on your obscure VHS hunt? Fool. Enough with you people. Had it with you horror geeks.
Well, you know, I don't mean to diss Pete at all. I mean,
Get Pete on here. Bring Pete. Bring me Shirella. Todd, are you still with us? I think Todd fell asleep.
I've been trying. I can't get him.
Come on, man. I don't see that little thing lighting up.
That's because he's not on.
Now call him.
I tried.
I didn't see you making that call, bro.
I did try. Where you been?
Playing me, bro. I'm watching the Skype window. Dude, don't con a con man. Let me tell you.
I swear.
Right out of the gate, dude. Don't.
I swear it.
You didn't do it.
I did.
Bring that bastard on.
Watch, I'll do it again and you'll see.
All right, let me see. Oh, there we go.
It just wouldn't go through.
Okay, now it's going through.
Oh. One ringy dingy.
We're going to call him out, man. I'm going to give him a piece of my mind. He's going to be pissed. This is a... he's not
going to...
He's baked. He's watching... Return of the Street Fighters baked out of his mind.
Oh, you've reached Pete Shirella.
Go to hell, Pete.
Pete, obviously, I'm doing something very unimportant.
Damn you.
I can't take your call, but leave your name and your number, and if I really like...
There you go.
Could have left him a message. Thank you, Todd, for doing that.
You're very welcome.
Not as fun as calling the church, but, you know, we tried.
No, the thing about Tarantino is I've said what I mean. The gist of Pete's argument was that Tarantino should be using a lot of these old actors that aren't, because in interviews he'll rave about all these B movies from the 60s and 70s, but what Pete is saying is that when you see his movies, he's using A-list actors, and he's not, you know, some of these guys need to be employed because they're not.
Right, a lot of these guys have been regulated to doing the convention schlub, you know, and I'm sure many of them don't enjoy it. It's not an enjoyable thing, you know. It's hard, bad enough to do one convention as a fan. Imagine having to schlep to these things and hear the same questions and give the same lines and smile when you don't feel like it, when you got diarrhea or something and you don't want to be happy. You can't be a dick to these people because they are your fans and they're giving you a $20 bill. It sucks, man. It's like, you know, it's like that scene in The Wrestler when they go to that VFW hall and it's the guys with the crutches and wheelchairs. That's what it is. That's what conventions are. You know, there's no glory in it. It's nice. It's fun. It's nice for you as the fanboy showing up with your poster that they don't even make any money off of anymore, this movie they were in. And it's very nice and it's cool. And on a simply creative level and an emotional, fun, we enjoyed our lives level, that's great. But this person's trying to make a living and put food on their table. And they probably have ex-wives and kids and grandkids or, you know, mortgage payments, all this stuff, and they're not getting the role. So I understand Pete's anger at guys like Tarantino who seem, from down here, seem to have, like, their finger, you know, they could point the finger and get something to happen. But, I mean, everything's so complicated doing a production. Who knows? Who knows who he tried to get? Who knows? Mr. Ree, like you've said, who knows who's turned down Tarantino?
Right, or didn't get the message because their agent didn't
give it to them. Or who knows what, you know, who knows if Tarantino didn't say, hey, give me this guy, and then the casting agent says, yeah, bring him in for a reading, and the person flubbed it, or they're just not good anymore, you know, they were only good in the 70s in a certain role or something. Who knows, you know, there's so many factors. And I'm with Pete on the spirit behind it. I'm totally with it, man. I hear you. They should do that. But, you know, there are, you know, also somebody who doesn't get credit for doing this is, you know, the Stallone with the Expendables. You know, mm-hmm. He's doing it.
Oh,
he's bringing these guys out of basically retirement. And it's harder for action guys to even have that secondary market unless you're a big name like a Lundgren or something, you know, where you could go, like, who, you know, Jeff Speakman shows up at a convention, who's gonna get stuff signed. You know, there are some really good action guys that he's bringing back into the fold, which is great, you know. And it's great that when that stuff can make money, at least for them, then, and maybe, well, I mean, look at Robert Foster. Such a big deal after Jackie Brown. Where is he? What happened? You know, it's not a guarantee that Tarantino starring him in a movie that is well received, there's no guarantee it's going to save his career, you know, like it did for Travolta or something, you know? It's not.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think, guys? Should we wrap this up? Have we covered enough topics in one show? I mean, geez, we went across the board here.
We did. Everything but movies, basically. No, we talked about movies.
We did talk about movies. You talked about Pete. Pete, if you're hearing this, don't be mad at us, Pete. We'll come on your show and talk about this. We'd love to come back on your show. You've been listening to the Movies Hate You show, sometimes about movies, sometimes about you, but always entertaining, at least to us. Get us at movieshateyou@gmail.com and go check out bmovie.com, even though they're sinking like the Titanic. Check them out. Hey, maybe you buy a few things and you'll save them from the dead. But my faith in you has been lost. I don't know if that'll happen. We will continue on. We will find a new sponsor. We will find more love out there in the universe. But will you? See you next time, Mr. Ree, Mr. Todd. Thank you guys for being my peanut gallery